CRJ225, this is your week 3 podcast. And this week, we're looking at Illinois criminal statutes, and in particular, the defenses of infancy, insanity, and intoxication. And I've asked you to go and find and look, read the statutes for this area of the law. And those statutes, as I pointed out, are all conveniently located under the title of responsibility in 720 ILCS 5/6, Article 6, titled responsibility. And this infers that the focus is on whether the defendant has the capacity to be responsible for his or her actions. As some of you know, and all of you will know after this week, the law requires or expects that you have capacity when it looks to you to be responsible for something. And this particular statute, the Illinois statute that essentially helps us understand what the defenses might be, also outlines, you know, expectations around responsibility. Section 6.1 of the statute says that no person shall be convicted of any offense unless he had attained his 13th birthday at the time of the offense. I'm not going to spend a great deal of time here discussing infancy because most of you will take juvenile delinquency. Suffice it to say, we see this defense debated more and more often as juveniles, very young kids even, commit heinous acts that we typically associate with adults. Primarily, these days, through weapons, firearms. I'll link in my comments a case, but it involves a 9-year-old boy in Chicago who was charged with murder. Be that as it may, 13 is sort of the statutory cutoff, the point where we have traditionally thought that someone was too young or conversely old enough to commit an adult act. And as some of you know, and all of you should know, we treat juveniles, people younger than 13 or people younger than 18 actually, potentially different depending on their act, depending on circumstances and factors. And we don't look to punish them as much as we look to rehabilitate. Most of the time, this is a situation that's sorted out in the charging phase with a decision, in most cases, to bring the child through the juvenile justice system, or on those rarer occasions, to charge the individual as an adult. The older they are, the more heinous and adult-like the crime may be, and especially if it is a crime committed with a weapon, a firearm, intentionally, or there's intent that's been able to be deciphered. They acquired the weapon, they planned to go out and commit the shooting. You'll see state's attorneys charge that juvenile as an adult. So that's infancy and some things to consider, but again, that's a really gray area. Intoxication or drug condition under 5/6-3. Intoxication infers that a person who is intoxicated or drugged is criminally responsible for conduct that's committed unless that condition was involuntary. So unless their state of being intoxicated, their state of being in that situation, unless that was something they didn't voluntarily enter into, they didn't know they were drinking the intoxicating substance or were being drugged or took drugs, they were drugged as opposed to taking the drugs or narcotics or substance voluntarily. And that deprived them of their substantial capacity to either appreciate the criminality of their conduct or to conform their conduct to the requirements of law. Now, involuntary intoxication or drug conditions are rare. And remember, the defendant must prove this and any other defense. So when someone raises a defense in a criminal case, or any case, civil as well, for those of you who had civil litigation in the fall, you know this, it's not up to the prosecutor to disprove the defense. It's up to the defendant to prove it, to prove that the intoxication was involuntary, to prove that it deprived them of capacity to appreciate the criminality. And by the same standard, beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal case. So think of some really good facts, witnesses, and proof of that intoxication. When would it not be of their free will? They were tricked, they were drugged, whatever. They didn't choose to drink or take or use the substances. It was something that was involuntary. Again, that's rare, right? Now, the classic case in this area that it probably is associated with is DUI, driving under the influence, which, as you hopefully know, can include, smoking the wrong kind or too much of the wrong kind of weed for operating a motor vehicle. That's a classic time that any of that type of defense would come up. And again, not very likely to come up and hard to prove. In the assignment, you're going to get a good idea about insanity. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on insanity here. You can read the statute. And then People v. Romero is a case that I'm going to have you break down. When you break down that case, really focus in on what I asked you to focus in on. The reasons for the court's finding at each stage of the process and all your observations as to the defense of insanity as it was raised in that case. Now, insanity, again, that's something that the defendant who raises the plea must prove. When you get to insanity, there's going to be an expert witness. Someone who is an expert in determining someone's mental state. And the mental state would be the mental state at the time of the occurrence. Insanity defenses are very difficult to prove in most cases. And it goes to that simple fact. The mental state at the time of the occurrence. depends on the evidence that's available at that time, the other people that were present, the observations, if there were people present, the observations or factors, evidence of the person's mental state or actions or activity just prior to the event, after the event, any prior histories, their status, you know, at the time. You're sitting there at trial. All of that comes into play, and the defense will have expert or experts. They might have more than one. And then the prosecutor will likely have experts to counter the defense experts. But again, it's up to the defendant to assert this defense and then prove that the defendant was lacking capacity and they met the burden of the insanity statute. We're going to continue our discussion about defenses next week when we move on to something that's a little, I guess, easier to prove depending on the facts of the case. And that's self-defense and defense of others. And we will also take a look at use of force. Now, those areas is a little commercial. That's something that you get a really close look at in the CRJ 227 class over the summer. And that class gets into the procedures, the procedural law, the expectations of law enforcement and dealing with the public for things like use of force and especially use of deadly force. Valuable class to take if you have the time. It's online, 8-week course. It's very similar to the format of CRJ 230 if you've taken that course, only the focus rather than be on evidence is solely on procedure. It's a course that was the basis for a course that I just released in the fall for certified police officers through the Central Illinois Police Training Center and the Training Standards Board for the state of Illinois for police officers. It's been something a lot of officers have taken. It reviews everything that you'll learn in this class. You'll learn it in greater detail. And I'm actually putting together a follow-up breaking down each of those sections in greater detail for those officers because everything you do regarding procedure, from the first time you see and encounter and talk to someone, regardless of whether they were guilty of a criminal act or had committed a criminal act or you had suspicion that they had committed a criminal act, all the way through the time that you arrest them, if that's where it goes, if you follow the law, you're aware of the law, you intentionally do the things you're supposed to do, well, then we don't end up with someone dying like 17-year-old Laquan McDonald in Chicago in 2014 and all the other cases we can think of where the procedural aspects of the law weren't at the forefront of the actions of the police at that time. Things got ahead or away, or the lack of knowledge and preparation and training or whatever it was. In this particular area, the things covered in CRJ 227 led to officer liability and worse, someone dying when they didn't have to. Hate to end on a note like that, but next week, that's where we're headed. you have any questions, concerns about the course, careers, transferring, whatever, if you need me, you know where to find me.